Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's my pleasure to bring you the first part of a three-part program on the life and times of baby boomer Lynn Thorpe. Born in 1950 in Melbourne, her early life was spent in the bayside town of Portsea. Those early years were terrific. She had wonderful parents, lived near Port Phillip Bay, went to a one-class primary school, and like many of her generation, had freedom and safety that represented a time that is now fast passing. Lynn loved music from an early age, but like many of her generation, was smitten by the music of the Beatles. She attended all the local dances, and, being a teen, often found herself in Melbourne during lunchtimes to catch one of the many gigs at one of the many city live music venues. Lynn excelled in a wide range of sports, but was unsure of her future career until she scored a job in the music industry. It was this job that led her to meeting one of Australia's iconic rock artists, Billy Thorpe. The circumstances of their meeting and how Billy initially was more smitten by Lynn than vice versa all comes out during our talk. So, let's make a start. Lynn, first of all, thank you for inviting me into your home. Could I start off by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born 1950 in Melbourne, but we lived in Portsea.
Portsea in 1950, that would have almost been the boondocks, wouldn't it? Back of nowhere.
Pretty much. It was the bottom of Australia, like far south as you can get before Tasmania.
What are your earliest memories of that period?
Well, it was just country. It was countryside. I was born on the Portsea golf course. I mean, I wasn't born there, but our parents were living there.
Right.
So we had wilderness all around us and farms and nothing like it is today.
You say you were born at the golf course. Were your parents living in a house attached to the golf course?
They were managing the golf course, and Dad was the green keeper, and they did everything in those days, you know, hosted the clubs, and he mowed the whole thing by himself.
He must
just about on the tractor.
Fit.
He was a very fit man.
Yeah. What sort of man was he? When you think about your dad now, how do you see him?
I see him as a strong survivor. I mean, he was orphaned at a very early age, and then he went to war and, you know, hard life.
What sort of man was he as a dad?
Mostly working. I can't remember him being around us very much. He was always doing something. Well, we often went fishing together.
Right.
Off the rocks out the back and in a dinghy catching whiting and things like that. But mostly he worked.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother, older brother. He lives in Portsea in our house.
So he's still in Portsea, right.
He's back in Portsea. He lived in Melbourne for a lot of years, and we kept the house, and now he's moved down there.
What about Mum? What sort of person was she?
Mum, also a hard worker. She was a nurse during the war and looked after old people a lot, and just a worker. She
just
worked
worker.
Very hard, yeah.
Was she a good mum?
Yeah, she was a good mum. Aren't all mums good mums?
All mums are good mums, that's right. Portsea, you've gone to school in that area then?
We did. We went to Portsea State School, which had an enrolment of 11. In the whole school. We had a one-room classroom, not far from the Portsea Golf Course. I had to cross the paddocks to get to school, across the bull paddock, so we would climb under the fence and run like hell to get across the bull paddock. And this is when I was about four, sent off to school by myself with my brother, who was supposed to be looking after me, but I'm not sure he did. Yes.
But it was safe to do it in those days, wasn't it?
To be out on your own?
Yeah.
We're always out on our own.
Exactly.
So parents never knew where we were.
Wouldn't do that today,
though. No, possibly not.
No. What about the school? Tell us more about a one-room school. That must have meant you had kids from different grades in the one room.
Yes, from Bubs, we called it then, which was pre-school, I suppose. Bubs, grade one up to six. Yeah, so I guess you learnt a lot more because you were hearing everyone's lessons. Mm. Yeah, so when I started, I think I was four, I can't remember, probably three and a half, walking to school across the bull paddock. And I played with blocks in the corner. I remember playing with those math blocks. I don't know what they're called. Do you know the ones, the coloured math blocks that stick together in the corner and just listening to what was going on. And then you gradually learn to write and to read. And
so did that mean that if you were a little bit more tuned in than other kids, you could work at your own pace and progress faster, or did they still keep you in set years?
I think we had a curriculum that we had to stick to, I suppose, but it was up to the teacher. If he thought you were ready for something else, then you'd have something else.
Did you enjoy that experience?
I did. Loved it. Yeah, I loved school up until I got to high school.
Well, before we get to high school, back to the primary school, what sort of things did you do to entertain yourself?
In our free time, you mean? Well, if the summer, if it was hot, you know, really hot in Portsea, then the teacher would just call it a day and take us all to the beach. So that was a school day.
That's a school
no day. No shoes were allowed if you wanted to, but we didn't want to because there were always burrs and horrible things to stand on.
Of course.
Yeah, so it was pretty wild and woolly.
Yeah. It sounds as though there weren't a lot of people around Portsea at that time.
No. Well, more than there are now, a lot more locals. Than there are now. Well, it's all holiday houses now.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So the local population, I'm not sure what it is, but it's very low because the shopping centre is no more. There used to be a grocer and a butcher and a greengrocer and a post office and all that. That's all gone.
So it's really lost its identity then.
It has. It's a little dead village. And now that the beach is gone because of this controversially, the blasting of the heads and the dredging to let all the big super tankers in has flooded Portsea Beach, so there's beach and there's no shops.
And Portsea Beach was really quite a feature of our coastline,
wasn't
it?
Fantastic. I mean, people came in there thousands every summer, and it was a great place to be.
Can you remember as a kid living there the period when people did start to come there at holiday times? Were you still there then?
Yes, they always came.
They always came.
Yeah, it was always holiday. The summer holidays was huge. Lots of camping. They had a caravan park in Portsea, which is also gone now.
Right.
That was the last of letting the hoi polloi in.
Was that something you just took for normal, or was it an exciting period when holidays came and all these people came?
Oh, I loved it because the winter and Portsea was just sort of a bit lonely and desolate. I had friends who came down from Melbourne on the weekends. So I had a funny sort of upbringing. I was a local, but my friends were from Toorak and all around the place because they had holiday houses and horses there. So I was a mad horse fanatic in those days. And
right.
Rode horses everywhere.
What about friends then? Did you have many friends locally?
Not many locally. I had one good friend who lived in Portsea. There weren't many of us.
There weren't many of you?
No.
Yeah.
A few boys, quite a few boys, but not many girls.
So what age did you leave Portsea?
I left when I finished high school.
So you went to what high school did you go to?
I went to Rosebud High School, which was the big smoke.
Right.
We went from 11 pupils to 300, which was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I bet it was.
That was a bus ride every day, like half an hour bus ride there and back.
Yes. I get the feeling that that wasn't the same sort of experience as the small one-room school for you.
No, it was different, really different. And I was very young when I got there. I was, what would I have been, 11? And a tiny little thing, as I still am. And when the bell rang between classes, we ran outside thinking it was playtime. So it was change classes time.
That would have been a culture shock for you.
Yes, yeah, it was. Indeed. Moving rooms and going to another class, yeah.
So what was it about the high school that, when I said to you earlier, did you like school, and you said up to high school, what was it about it? Was it the fact that there were more kids there, or was it the type of work you did? What was it that...
Well, it was fine until I hit adolescence. That's when it all sort of went a bit sideways, and I wanted to have more fun, and I found school boring and, you know, the usual teenage thing.
Indeed.
Up until then, I was a happy little camper.
So you would have hit teenagehood in the early 60s?
60,
then.
Yeah, right around the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all of that.
Do you remember?
I was led astray.
By them?
Yes, by the
fault.
Music.
You cast your mind back now. Can you actually remember the first time you heard that style of music? How it happened?
Well, I think earlier than that was the Everly Brothers and Elvis Presley and all of that. I was still of an age to appreciate that. I was about six then, but I still love to sing and dance. And
so was that through listening to radio?
Yeah, it must have been through the radio. Yeah, because the only records we had at home were like old 78s and, you know, Little White Duck Sitting in the Water and all that stuff.
Yes, I do remember. Did radio play an important part of your life? Or was it?
I think it must have. Stan Roaf and 3Z and 3AK and all those old stations in Melbourne. I think we were glued to them, listening to the Beatles and screaming when She Loves You came on.
it really defined a whole generation, didn't it? Just those couple of years, the change came about because of that music experience.
I remember the first time I saw a photo of them. I think it was in Post or one of those old magazines, of the hair. And looking back on it these days, it wasn't really that long. It was just a shortcut brushed forward.
Yeah.
But it was so scandalous in those days. People were laughing at them and calling them mop heads and
girls.
And we loved them.
Yes.
Yes. The more the older generation kicked up about them, the more we loved them.
Yes. And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Lynn Thorpe. And Lynn is recollecting her life as a teenager around about the same time as the Beatles' music hit Australia. So you're a teenage girl. This music is really appealing to you. Are you basically stuck, though, in Portsea, or are you getting out?
We got out. Yeah, we caught the train to Melbourne. We came to the clubs, the lunchtime clubs in those days called 10th Avenue and the Bowl. Yeah, I'm not sure I was meant to be in Melbourne, but I managed to get up here quite a lot.
A lot of young men and women.
Maybe, right. I said I was staying at someone else's house or something, and I ended up at 10th Avenue accidentally.
But you're still a schoolgirl at this stage, aren't
you?
Oh,
yes, 14, about that, 14, 15.
So what age did you leave school?
I left school when I was 17, yes. And we were all music mad in those days. There was a lot of dances down the peninsula. We had Tomcats at Sorrento every summer, and we just haunted that place. And all the big bands came through there. And Rosebud had clubs, and all the town halls all the way up the peninsula had a dance going. And yeah, so there was a lot of music, Easy Beats, and we had them all.
Yes, indeed. And if you weren't able to catch them live, there were some fantastic television programs starting then as well, weren't there?
There was. The Go programs. Show and what else was there for us? I can't remember the TV shows.
At that stage of your life, you're obviously not finding school particularly palatable. Did you have something in mind that you wanted to do?
Good question. There wasn't many options open to us. My friends were heading towards being teachers or nurses, and I couldn't really see a path forward for me because I didn't want to be a teacher or a nurse. I was very interested in art. I was a sports star, like every sport.
Such as?
Tennis, hockey, softball, swimming, diving, horse riding,
incredibly
all sorts
active.
Of things. I was very fit. I don't know, I think I had a talent for sport.
Did you make it a feature of your life at any stage? Did you get involved in any competition?
School sport I did, and I was the junior champion of the Mornington Peninsula in tennis. But I didn't follow through because I was of very small stature. And if you wanted to be a professional, you had to be a little bit bigger than me, especially in tennis. You know, if you come up against a very tall, powerful girl, you really don't have an equal playing field.
No. Did that annoy you?
I would have loved to have been a professional tennis player, put it that way. And I followed tennis fanatically for years, and I played a lot. I played in LA when we got there. And I used to love sending my sizzling serve down to Russell Morris and all the guys that came through LA. They just couldn't believe it as they saw it whiz by them. He still won't play sport with me. We wanted to get him to play golf with me. He won't. He said, oh, I still remember LA.
Traumatized.
I traumatized him with my serve.
Okay, you suddenly mentioned Russell and LA, and that leads me to asking you the question, when did Lynn Thorpe, teenage girl, fascinated with the Beatles and the Stones and the general music environment, suddenly become more focused in on it? How did that all come about?
Focused in on it?
Yeah, how did you
suddenly
make this
connection? Well, I got a job in the music business.
What job was that?
I worked for Ray Evans at the Australian Entertainment Exchange.
Mm-hmm. And what job?
Booking bands.
Right.
You know, filling out the forms and being a little Miss Typist and, yes.
Did you enjoy that?
I did. I did enjoy that. And then I went to work for Gudinski and
Michael
Chugg, and they had Consolidated Rock at the time, and it was around the time of they had a magazine called The Daily Planet, or a newspaper called The Daily Planet, which was in the same office. So I went to work there as a receptionist, but I wasn't there very long because I'd met Billy in the meantime.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
This is a special Baby Boomers edition. In case there's somebody out there who's had their head in the sand for the last 40 years, we're talking about Billy Thorpe here. How did you meet Billy? When and how?
Yes, it's a bit convoluted, but when I was working for Ray Evans as his secretary, secretary, booking girl, one of the roadies that used to come in, called Norm Sweeney, reported back to his boss at the time, Billy, that there was a new girl working in the office and he should go in and have a look. And Billy tells me that he came in one day, which I don't remember, and he said I looked straight through him and didn't take any notice of him. So I think I struck an arrow through his heart.
What year was this, can you recall?
Must have been 71.
71. So Billy's career really has been building up over a number of years by now.
Yes, he'd had two careers already by then. I think he'd had the early days at Surf City. And then when he left the Aztecs, he had sort of a solo career, didn't he, as a singer.
Had you taken any notice of him as a performer before you... this event occurred? I mean...
Well, when we were young and playing records in our rooms, we used to dance around with our hands behind our back, you know, taking off Billy.
Doing the mashed potato.
Doing the mashed potato.
One of the great songs of our time.
Poison Ivy, yeah.
Yes.
No, we knew who he was.
Okay. So when he walked in that day, in his words, you looked through him. Can you recall that? Was that because you didn't recognise him or you were just...
Probably, because he looked nothing like the Billy Thorpe that we knew when I was 14. He'd hit Melbourne and his hair was in long and beard, and probably didn't recognise him.
Okay, so this obviously piqued his interest, though, the fact that you didn't form a library.
It must have.
Yeah, so what happened after
well,
that?
Well, it's all hearsay because it's what he told me, that he was in a taxi one day, and I was riding a motorbike at the time, and he was behind me, and he told the taxi driver to follow that girl because he liked the way I changed lanes or something.
Oh, how romantic.
I know, how romantic. Follow that bike. Well, he didn't catch me that day either. No. It turned out in the end that I was living right around the corner from where he was living, and I ran into him in the local shop one day. So I'm not sure how it progressed from there. I did get, for my 21st birthday, I got a dozen yellow roses, and it was signed from Billy, and I had no idea who Billy was, and I called my best friend's mother, whose name was Billy, and I said, "Did you send me flowers?" I must have been in a cloud or something. I had no idea.
I think we could look back at that as a very innocent response, isn't it? I mean, calling a spade, most girls probably would have gone falling over themselves.
I know. I think that's what attracted
the fact that you
him to me, didn't. That I didn't really care who he was.
Yes, yes. Were you having a relationship? Did you have a boyfriend at that stage?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Right. Going to come back to Billy, but there was something you said a little earlier that piqued my interest. You rode a bike. When did you start riding motorcycles?
I used to ride on the back of a friend's bike. We once took off and went to Sydney on a bike, which was quite an excruciating trip on a motorbike in those days. It wasn't the straightforward road that it is these days, and we slept in a cow paddock, and it was a bit of an adventure in those days. But he talked me into getting it was only a small bike, it was a Yamaha trail bike, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. I'd ride it to work and ride it down to Portsea. It wasn't meant for the road, really, but I rode it. Yeah, I'd still like a bike. I don't think my girls would let me, and Mick probably wouldn't let me, but I'd love a bike.
So the bike riding obviously gave you a sense of freedom. And
it did. Well, at the time I was tossing up between getting a bike or getting an MGTC, those funny old MGs, and they were quite cheap in those days, but I'm probably glad I didn't because that would have been a money pit.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And I probably couldn't see over the steering wheel either.
All right, let's cast our minds back to your adventures with Billy. At what point did you start going out with him then? Was that fairly shortly afterwards or did it take a long time?
I think it was. Yeah, we went our first date, if you can call it that. I took him out on the back of my bike, and it wasn't a very big bike. And we went to a club in Melbourne called Peanuts, where they had sawdust on the floor and peanuts on the table, and you could throw your peanuts on the floor. It was a big, I don't know what it was, a gimmick. Yeah. But, we went there, and that didn't turn out too well because Billy was really well known in those days, and people used to harass him. I don't know why. And these, smart aleck guys over the back started tossing peanut shells at him. So that didn't go very well. So we left there and went home, and then I'm not sure how it all happened from there.
Things just happened.
It just happened. I met him, and then that was it for the next 36 years.
So at what point in the relationship did you get married? Did that happen fairly quickly after meeting him?
No. We were hippies. We didn't get married till after the second child.
Right.
Very scandalous, but we were never going to get married.
Well, not to our peers it wasn't, but to our parents it probably.
Yeah, I don't think it went too well with my parents, but they realised that we were together. It wasn't just...
Yeah.
No, it wasn't just something casual. It was meant to be, so...
You were still in Melbourne with Billy at that stage, or was it up in Sydney?
No, we were Melbourne. No, we never lived in Sydney until we returned from LA. Yeah, so it was Melbourne. We left from Melbourne to go to LA. Billy was coming through Melbourne, not to stay. He was on his way to England for, what's the Bee Gees manager's name?
Oh, Stigwood.
Stigwood wanted him to go to London. And he was coming through Melbourne to go to London, and somehow he didn't leave Melbourne. I think he met Lobby, and Lobby turned him into the wild man guitar player, and he stayed. He loved it. He just loved the, well, at the time, the Melbourne music scene was just incredible.
Yes.
So I don't blame him for not leaving, because Stigwood wanted him to be a crooner and, you know, a next Barry Manilow or something. But
thank goodness he followed his heart.
Yes. Possibly not for his bank account. It's not, thank goodness, but, you know.
That's right. For you, it must have been a massive change in lifestyle, though, once you became a genuine couple together, because it would have seemed to me, from what you've said, compared to Billy, your life is fairly quiet. Billy, on the other hand, especially in the 70s, from what I've read, was pretty wild times.
Yes, yeah.
How did you cope with that?
It was wild times, but it was very exciting, and not long after I met Billy, we had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I was mum at home then.
Join Lynn and I next week where we learn a lot more about Lynn and her life with Billy, including an amazing life together in Los Angeles, a life that was partially brought to a conclusion by a massive earthquake. All this and more next week in part two of The Life and Times of Lynn Thorpe on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.